This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The rollout of the Affordable Care Act has been a disaster. The website healthcare.gov didn't work, preventing people from signing up. The result was a lot of finger-pointing in Washington as computer programmers scrambled to fix the problems. That was several weeks ago. They're still working on it. We're told the site is improving daily, but the clock is also ticking toward the sign-up deadline. Only 50,000 people have done so as of today, and in order for Obamacare to work, millions have to sign up. Meanwhile, it turns out that the president wasn't quite truthful when he told people on the campaign trail that if you like your current insurance, you can keep it. Folks from around the country have been complaining that they've been receiving cancellation notices from their insurance companies because the policies they like don't comply with the new provisions of the Affordable Care Act and therefore will be terminated. And not all Americans in the 50 states will be getting equal treatment under the Affordable Care Act because some states have expanded Medicaid, which acts as a safety net for those who fall into particular categories under the Affordable Care Act, while other states, like North Carolina, have opted not to expand the federal program, a decision that will leave thousands uninsured. Some states have more competition among insurance companies, which is driving down rates, while others, like North Carolina, have little competition. And making matters worse, those insurance plans are connected to particular hospitals and doctor networks, and your doctor and favorite hospital may not be in that insurance plan's network. So today, 6 weeks after the rollout of Obamacare, it's time for a checkup. We've invited several regional experts to join us. Dr. Roger Ray is Executive Vice President and Chief Medical Officer with Carolina's Healthcare System. Good morning and welcome. Joining us by phone is Adam Linker, Policy Analyst with Health Access Coalition at the North Carolina Justice Center. Good to hear from you again. Good morning, Adam. Somebody talk back to me this morning.
Yeah, good morning.
Also in our studio is Michael Tomczyk from WFAE News. He's been following developments in the affordable care rollout in North Carolina and will fill in the gaps where necessary. He's been talking to a lot of people who have been trying to get on the website and who've been getting sticker shock and other things, and he'll be chiming in here and there. Good morning and welcome back.
Hello, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for talking to me. I appreciate it. And we'll be joined later on by Garrick Brenner, who's with Progress North Carolina. They're working to get Medicaid expanded in the state. Adam, at the moment, what is the status of healthcare.gov? Does it work yet?
Well, not very efficiently. I'm sort of staying off of it now because I don't want to be the person who crashes it, but I don't want to be like the one tipping point person. But, I have a coworker who kept trying to apply and it worked for him. He got through and got an insurance plan, but then I have other friends who have applied and haven't been able to get through. So I think we're still sort of hit and miss with who can enroll and who gets through and who doesn't.
The people you've been talking to, Michael, how far have they gotten in the process?
One of them actually did get all the way through and was able to look at plans, at the other end of it. The problem was that she kind of falls into this gap that we have because we're not expanding Medicaid, which I'm sure we can kind of get into later. It's a little technical, but anyways. But the other person that I've been meeting with, it's been a week or two since we met back up, but she's tried, I think, 4 or 5 times and still has not been able to get all the way through. They're both pretty young. One's a 28-year-old woman. One's a 32-year-old woman. And they both had a good sense of humor about it, but at the same time, you know, we're getting farther and farther along, and they're getting more and more frustrated because they would like to have insurance plans that start on, you know, January 1, and they're kind of running out of time for it to start, that soon.
Do hospital systems have a dog in this race? Do you want this system to work, or do you care? Does it matter to you?
Well, I think that the very basis of health, the very basis of improving care everywhere we provide it, relies on a trusted relationship between a patient and their physician or care provider, and therefore getting assurances whether that relationship is intact and, in fact, preserved as we're going through such a big change as the rollout of the marketplace and other changes that are contemplated by the ACA has created an awful lot of confusion, an awful lot of fear.
Did it there was a lot of fear before the thing opened on October the 1st, but this has really created a lot of fear because it doesn't work at all. Talk about that. I mean,
I think some is necessary. You know, we're talking about an exceedingly complex industry, a sixth of the nation's economy, in a situation where the payment for care, which is really what's currently being reformed, sometimes does but sometimes doesn't track along with the actual provision of care, let alone the improvement of care. And that complexity has always been there. But now as these changes are rolling through the system and they get real voice, people are becoming aware of two things. One is the extreme complexity, and the other is the fear around unintended consequences as the rollout occurs. So that's what we're all trying to help manage. We've had hundreds of patients call us as we offer assistance for them in the choices they make.
Adam, you're a policy analyst. The federal government is involved in incredibly complex things. The tax code is the most complex thing known to man, probably. And we also fight these wars with incredibly complex machinery that we help design. Although other companies do it for us, we put the details in. What happened here? Why couldn't we do this?
Well, thankfully, I wasn't working on it, but I think I'm as frustrated as anyone, and I think that October 1st, I mean, it should work. It should have worked, and there's really no excuses anyone could give me that would make me feel a lot better about it.
You know, I actually had a red flag moment before it opened because they were talking about how they have hired all these people around the country called navigators. And you can still get to a navigator, and these people are trained to help you through the procedure.
Right.
Almost everybody in the world has bought something online or dealt with Amazon.com. Why do I need help website?
Well, I think, it's a little more, the thing is there are people who either, don't have access to computers or just aren't comfortable with that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So there are these people in Medicare called Seniors Health Insurance Information Program, basically people who will sit down with you, they're experts in Medicare, and walk you through the process. And so that was created, navigators were created in health reform to replicate that model that's worked so well in Medicare.
Michael.
So the navigators, I think, were a good part of health reform and are going to be an important part. But I think I am sympathetic to the difficulties of launching the website because you're really designing a website where there's sort of total resistance to it, to implementing health reform. North Carolina basically decided we weren't going to participate this year. So you had sort of late decisions by states. You have all these sort of complex Medicaid decisions being made by states, whether they're going to opt for a new system or the old system. And so there were a lot of complexity and also a lot of last-minute decisions by states and a lot of last-minute opposition. So they were designing it in against great odds, but as you say, we've done things against great odds before. So I don't think that's an excuse, but I do understand that it was not under ideal circumstances.
Okay, Michael.
And off Adam's point with the navigators, part of it too is, one of the big things with the exchanges is to help people who have, low to moderate incomes use them. That's why there are subsidies for those folks. So the idea with the navigators is you put them in community centers, like in our area, C.W. Williams, there are navigators who are there. So it's an idea of you can have...
Are they there every day? 9 to 5?
Not totally sure, actually, on the hours. But
how does one find a navigator and when they're available? How do you do that?
I think you can just show up at the different community centers and find them that way. Our public libraries also have information.
And can a navigator take you through the whole process, whether or not the website is operating?
No. So what a lot of them are doing are getting people through like the paper process, and then they are then going in once the website works and doing it for those folks by entering the paper process. But of course, that means they can't guarantee them, what their subsidy is going to be. So they would have to check back in with them once the website is actually working.
There's a website I heard about on the news the other day. These 320 something guys got together and they looked at this mess and thought, what's the big deal? We can do this. And they have created an aggregator website where you can go in and you type in your zip code and up instantly come all the plans, up come all the subsidies, etc. And it's called The Health Sherpa, S-E-H-E-R-P-A, thehealthsherpa.com. I went on there, and if these prices are right and the subsidies are right, at least you can get – you can't buy into the program from there – but at least you can get a good idea of what your situation is going to be.
Well, and the other thing you can do, so Blue Cross Blue Shield, for sure, I think Coventry as well, on their websites, you can kind of do the same thing. It would be just for their plans. You could go through and see, okay, my Blue Cross plans on the exchange would cost X, and they'll calculate what the subsidy is. But again, it's just not exact. You know, I mean, unless you go through healthcare.gov, you don't know for sure that this is what my subsidy would be and that you can actually enroll in this specific plan and ideally compare other plans.
Now, both you, Michael, and Adam, you've been talking to people around. Adam, you've been traveling around the state talking to people.
Right.
You've been doing it here in the Charlotte area, Michael. What have people been saying to you about the whole thing, about the problems, about the idea of it, what they've experienced when they've gotten onto the site, those who have? What have they been telling you?
For me, I think, you know, it's sort of a mix of reactions. People are anxious about, you know, getting the letter, Blue Cross letters, or saying that they're going to have to switch plans, or they've never had insurance and they want to get it. And a lot of the folks aren't able to shop and compare plans as we need to be able to do to make this work. And so they sort of think they might get a subsidy, but they're not sure. And then you have a lot of people on the edge who are just finding out that North Carolina refused the Medicaid expansion that would help low-income folks. And, of course, the subsidies don't go down below 100% of federal poverty level, which is $11,500 for a single individual. And so a lot of the folks are nervous that, I didn't realize there was no help for low-income people in North Carolina.
Let me bring Garrick Brenner into the conversation. He's joining us from the studios at WUNC in Chapel Hill. He's the executive director with Progress North Carolina. They're an organization working to get Medicaid expanded in the state. What does this gap in coverage mean, and how many people does it affect in North Carolina, Garrick?
Well, the estimates are between 300,000 and 500,000. Some of you even said 600,000 people who would be eligible for expanded Medicaid if Governor McCrory would allow Medicaid expansion. So,
is that fair to blame it all on Governor McCrory?
Well, he would also have to get approval from the state legislature.
Yeah, but go ahead.
Right, right. So that's a lot of people. If the legislature had decided to do what 25 other states have done, and nine of those states are led by Republican governors. Those people would be on the way to health coverage.
So let me get this straight. Only 25 states have opted in?
25 have.
That's half. That's only 50%. Why?
Cost. I mean, so the federal government would cover the cost of expanded Medicaid, all of it, for the first 3 years.
Yeah.
After that, it could eventually phase down to 90% of the cost. So when the Affordable Care Act was made, the thought was, this is, you know, we're going to cover so much of this, it's going to entice people to come in, because potentially if you have more people who are insured, it could save money on the back end.
So the federal government giving us back our own money, because that's what it is, they're giving us back our tax dollars for these subsidies. What's the difference between the federal government giving it back to us in these subsidies, because we're paying for it going in, or the state government's giving us back the money? What's the difference? Is it just politics? In other words, the North Carolina politicians don't want to say we have to tax you more because we're giving
you more. It's politics, not cost.
Okay, we have to stop.
But
we have to stop. Let's take a break. We'll come back with more of that and more on this discussion. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the German Embassy, presenting the Skills Initiative Roadshow, bringing German and American best practices in skills and educational training to Charlotte. More on the Skills Initiative at germany.info. And Blumenthal Performing Arts, presenting the Irish Tenors, Finbar Wright, Anthony Kearns, and Ronan Tynan with their Irish Holiday Celebration Tour in Belk Theater, November 30th. Tickets at blumenthalarts.org. Well, as the old song goes, there's an awful lot of coffee in Brazil. There's also an awful lot of Brazil in Charlotte. There are six Brazilian firms operating here, including two U.S. headquarters. 2,000 Brazilians call Charlotte home, and our airport has daily flights to Rio. We're going to meet the ambassador from Brazil to the United States tomorrow to talk about this relationship and what it means going forward. That's all tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Amazon will use the U.S. Postal Service for Sunday deliveries in New York and L.A., with plans to expand the service to other cities. How the push toward same-day is transforming online shopping and the retail industry.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.
We're giving the Affordable Care Act a checkup today on Charlotte Talks here on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, sitting here with Dr. Roger Ray, Executive Vice President of the and Chief Medical Officer at Carolina's Medical Carolina's Healthcare System. Michael Tomczyk's also in our studio with WFAE News. Adam Linker's a Policy Analyst for Health Access Coalition. He joins us by phone. And Garrick Brenner is the Executive Director of Progress North Carolina. He's in the studios at WUNC in Chapel Hill. This is a little difficult to understand. I actually did not know that only 50% of the 50 states have decided to expand Medicaid. And the federal government, as you pointed out, Michael, has said that they will cover the costs guaranteed for 3 years, and then they may or may not shift the costs to the states after the third year. And that is why North Carolina and some other states have decided not to do this, because they don't know what the cost will be, and there's more to it than that.
Yeah, well, so and especially in North Carolina, I mean, we've done extensive coverage here about how our Medicaid program, our state is having a very tough time budgeting for our Medicaid program. We keep going over budget. So basically what the Republican governor and legislators who are in charge are arguing on this specific front is, okay, even though at some point it may only be 10% of the expanded cost, the federal government may cut out so that we have to cover 10% of the cost of expanding Medicaid a couple years down the road. They don't know what that 10% is the argument that they make. So essentially, and you look at a Medicaid program, I mean, it's one of the most expensive things that our legislature budgets for every single year. So that 10% could be a substantial cost, mm-hmm. and that's the argument. Mm-hmm.
But given that the Affordable Care Act was depending on Medicaid to fill in these gaps of coverage where people can't afford to buy insurance, et cetera, they don't make enough to qualify for the subsidies, why was it set up that way? Why don't subsidies just kick in? Or why would somebody write a law that depends on Medicaid to work and then make it optional for the states?
Because the Supreme Court made it optional. It was not optional in the Supreme Court case that upheld essentially that, okay, most of this law is okay. They also said, but the Medicaid expansion, that is now an optional choice for the states. That was not supposed to be optional.
So, Garrick, your organization, Progress North Carolina, is working to get the legislature to reverse their decision on Medicaid. What is the likelihood of that happening?
Well, at this point, it's probably not likely, but, you know, you ask people, you pull this question, you know, when people look at the facts, they think that Medicaid should be expanded. This debate has boiled down to just politics, and it's all about obstruction of the Affordable Care Act. The two main reasons, or some say excuses, for not expanding Medicaid have been a broken system because of cost overruns, and you can't trust the federal government. Now, as far as cost overruns go, there was an interesting piece of news in early October which showed that cost overruns really were triggered by cuts to previous Medicaid budgets, which had been predicted. People inside the previous governor's administration, Bev Perdue, had sent warning flags up to the legislature saying, if you're going to cut Medicaid, you will not be able to withstand this budget because, you know, Medicaid is an entitlement program. When people show up and they're eligible, you can't deny them service. So when the legislature had made cuts to Medicaid, they were unrealistic. And Perdue's administration had sent them warning signs and said, hey, look, you're going to get cost overruns. Now, there was an audit from the state auditor which talked about cost overruns. And the new administration under Governor McCrory did not really defend the cost overruns. They didn't mention that there had been previous budgets which had made drastic cuts to Medicaid. In fact, Governor McCrory has blamed the cost overruns on the previous governor who vetoed those budgets, which were passed by the General Assembly, which is controlled by Republicans. So the whole cost overruns argument is a lot more complicated than it's been portrayed by the governor. So, as far as the question of you can't trust the federal government, one point that has not been stressed enough is that, you know, once a state decides to expand Medicaid, that's not an agreement written in stone. They can try it on for size. You can go 3 years with the federal government paying 100% of the expansion, and if you don't like it after 3 years, you can opt out. You can do it for 2 years and opt out. But the governor is trying to claim that this is an agreement that once you decide to expand Medicaid, you can't reverse it. That's not true.
Well, yeah, but doesn't he have a point? I mean, if this rollout were smooth, had it been working properly and people were enrolling in the plan and on January 1st, suddenly they would be covered, and even those who couldn't afford insurance would be covered under Medicaid. 3 years from now, it seems to me the fear is on the part of those who are against the whole idea of this socialized medicine thing, and it's not really socialized.
Yeah,
medicine,
the insurance companies are still...
That's
yeah.
right. That the fear would be that people would say, wait a minute, I like this. This works. And that's they don't want them to like it. Is that – I'm being cynical here on purpose, but is that part of
sure.
the fear?
Well, I think, you know, when both Michael and Garrick made the – I was in every single committee meeting where Medicaid expansion and the exchanges, you know, setting up a state-based marketplace instead of relying on the federal government was discussed. And they're both making the argument more coherent than they actually were. I mean, it was really politics. I mean, again and again, they just said, we don't want anything to do with Obamacare. Some of the legislative leaders have come in and tried to put a different narrative on it and say, well, costs, you know, I mean, we're worried about this or that. But in fact, the whole time, and we would point out that there's an Institute of Medicine study that shows because you could shift so much state spending to federal dollars, the state would save money over 10 years with Medicaid expansion. And so, you know, they've sort of come in with a different narrative, but it was really anti-Obamacare feelings in North Carolina in the legislature, which caused the rejection. And they rejected also setting up a state-based marketplace, which if we, you know, I just talked to some folks in Kentucky. North Carolina was leading the nation with setting up a state-based marketplace. We had all the stakeholders in the room, everybody from the chamber to consumer advocates to the NFIB, Republicans who hate Obamacare, all came together and we agreed on a bill that would set up a state-based marketplace. We were going to lead the nation, and then this legislature rejected that whole thing. And so now we are, you know, in Kentucky, they decided to, which is not a blue state, it's a bluegrass state, but not a blue state, and they set up a state-based marketplace, expanded Medicaid, and they're enrolling 1,000 people a day, and they don't have to worry about the federal marketplace.
Michael.
And none of this stuff can get technical, but the bottom line is it has an effect. I mean, as an example, I met with this 32-year-old woman who went through the marketplace, got to the end of it, has a very low income, and realized, I can't afford any of these plans because I can't get a subsidy. She doesn't make enough money to get a subsidy because the subsidies only cover people who make from, you know, the federal poverty line to four times the federal poverty line. If you're under that, the Affordable Care Act was supposed to get you covered through Medicaid. When that became optional, that means you have actual people. I mean, there's this 32-year-old woman I met with who cannot afford insurance through the exchange because she can't get a subsidy and she can't get Medicaid.
So just for the point of this conversation, let's say that the people in the legislature are right, that North Carolina cannot afford to expand Medicaid and it would be disastrous for the state going forward. Is that a fool's game? You're in the hospital business, and it seems to me that people who are not covered because they fall into this gap, they can't get Medicaid, they can't afford the insurance, they will be uninsured. They will come to you. They will come to the emergency room for their general care. They will come to you if they have an appendicitis or a pregnancy, and they won't be able to pay you. What is that? Who ultimately pays for that?
Right. Well, one of the things that the light shining from this conversation has made us all more aware of is what the current drivers as it relates to payment are.
Mm-hmm.
We see millions of patients a year, and currently 60% of them, whatever payment we get, if we get any, and this is a discussion about whether we would get any, doesn't cover the cost of what it took to take care of the patient.
The real cost or the bill?
The real
cost.
There's a difference. No, the actual cost of providing the care.
Okay.
60%. And so for years, behind the scenes, that was occurring, and there was enough cross-subsidization to sort of keep it going. One of the things not so obvious about this Medicaid expansion issue is its effect on providers. But there are really two groups of people or two types of organizations that are directly impacted by the lack of expansion. One is the patient, the most important, you know, those who are in that gap and therefore are facing, many of them, big bills with no support whatsoever. The other is providers. Providers took millions and over the country billions of dollars of cuts and reductions to special programs that existed as Band-Aids for years on the promise of, well, everybody's going to be covered or at least a lot more are going to be covered because we're going to expand everywhere.
So volume
hospitals are
the
paying
difference.
The fees today. Mm-hmm. Hospitals are taking cuts today. Taxpayers are paying more taxes today for the promise of increased expansion, and it's not there. The result is more economic pressure on every provider in the state, no question about
so
it.
So hospital systems, the Carolina's healthcare system is one of the biggest hospital systems in this part of the country, and there are hospital systems across the country that are enormous and have lobbying power. Where do you guys come down on this? What's happening behind the scenes between you and your interests and the legislature?
Well, for the way it was constructed and for the promises that were made as it relates to why all the cuts would be tolerable, it was the promise of Medicaid expansion. So we favor it. We think it's good for patients and good for those who take care of patients to be able to sustain. You're seeing all over the country the economic pressures on hospitals and health systems come to the extreme of cost cutting and that sort of thing. There's new articles and stories weekly now about the impact that the lack of expansion is having across the states that haven't expanded it. And it's a pretty dire circumstance, particularly for smaller rural communities where this really may be the difference in a hospital remaining open or shutting its doors.
Garrick Brenner, in your work to try to get the legislature to reverse their decision on this, are you having interactions with hospital systems? Are you enlisting their support in your efforts? What's going on there?
In our efforts, we took notice of a small rural hospital in Beaufort County, which closed, Vidant Pungo Hospital. The initial report from the Greenville Daily Reflector was it closed in part because they could not serve patients who would have had coverage with the expanded Medicaid. Now, the closure of a clinic or a hospital is rarely for a single reason, to be fair. It can be murky and complicated, but clearly this is having an impact as it was predicted to have. There's also a clinic in Guilford County, which closed in part because of lack of Medicaid expansion when they thought Medicaid would be expanded. So the stress is being felt.
The potential here, obviously, is that a lot of people will be better off for having this coverage available for those who qualify and who can actually get it. They will ultimately be better off because they'll be able to see a doctor on a regular basis and they can never be canceled because of a condition that crops up and they'll have to be accepted even if they have a pre-existing condition. Are those who are falling through the cracks going to be any worse off than they were?
Well, I mean, where they were was anytime I go into a hospital or anytime I have something bad happens, this giant bill, I pay this how? So I'm not sure how you get much worse off than that, frankly. Basically, where they are now is they cannot pay for basic medical things that they need.
Will you be worse off? Will hospitals be worse off?
Well, I think we're both worse off. Let's take the extreme circumstance today where a patient has, theoretically, and it's not so theoretical, diabetes, where excellent care month by month all year will result in fewer hospitalizations, fewer readmissions, less end organ damage, and reduced visits to the emergency room, let's say. We have uninsured citizens in our state who may go to the emergency room 20 times this year.
Yeah.
You don't have to cut into very many of those to where overall from a cost perspective across the state you've done a good thing. In addition to the patient's life is a very different circumstance. They're now able to be employable, let's say, or support their family in other sorts of ways. So it is real impact to patients and also to us, for us to be able to create the clinic that follows that patient closely to keep them out of the emergency room, keep them out of the hospital.
We have a lot of people on the phone holding on. I want to join this conversation with a lot of things that have come across email and Twitter and Facebook, which we'll get to, I promise, in a second or two. But so shortly after it became apparent that the website healthcare.gov was not functioning properly, people around the country also began getting these notices from their insurance companies. These are people who are already insured and had policies that they liked and planned to stick with those policies, but they were being canceled because these policies don't fit into the criteria set up by the Affordable Care Act. Now, I know that there are politicians in Washington working on legislation that would stop that. If you like it, you can keep it kind of thing. But the president said that these people who are being dropped are being dropped from policies that are subpar, and they'll be able to get policies that are better. Is that true?
In some cases, yes. And let's keep in mind this is for the individual market. This isn't people who get it through their employers. But in those cases, a lot of these policies, some of the families that I've talked to where their policies are disappearing, they had very, very cheap premiums and very high deductibles, very high out-of-pocket costs. You can kind of think of it as like a catastrophic plan. If something really awful happens, this is going to help me.
But they're offering catastrophic plans on the healthcare exchange.
Only if you are under 30 or if your premiums would add up over the course of the year to more than 8% of your income. So you not everyone can get in catastrophic plan. But these plans, they didn't cover much. So in some cases, yes, the new plan that you would get that would be more expensive, that meets the new criteria, it covers more benefits. There's more cost sharing. There are lower out-of-pocket costs. But there are much higher premiums.
Well, that means if you like the policy that you have, you can't necessarily keep it. So did the president lie?
Well, let me point out in the individual market, the folks who are getting those letters from Blue Cross, and I don't like the way politicians talk anyway, but making that kind of promise. But if you had a policy in force when health reform was signed, you could keep that policy, and it would be grandfathered. Even if it didn't meet all the requirements of the Affordable Care Act. And so as long as you didn't change the benefits or buy a new policy after March 2010. So you could have grandfathered that. And so the week after, or I think a couple of weeks after the letters went out about plans that are being canceled or changed to meet the Affordable Care Act criteria, they sent out grandfathered plan letters. So there are a lot of people who still get to keep their grandfathered plans if they've had them since health reform was passed.
We have to take a break. We're going to come back and we'll open the phones for some people who have been holding on for quite a while to talk about this. And we'll get to some other issues surrounding the Affordable Care Act and the rollout of it when we come back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the UNC Center for Aortic Disease, providing comprehensive treatments for all aortic diseases. Information at uncaortic.org. And from the Southern Christmas Show for the 46th annual show featuring holiday crafts, gifts, and music and food, Thursday through the 24th at the Park Expo and Conference Center. Details at southernchristmasshow.com. Amazon is going to use the U.S. Postal Service for Sunday deliveries in New York and Los Angeles, with plans to expand that service to other cities. How the push toward same-day delivery is transforming online shopping and the retail industry at the subject of the conversation in 20 minutes on The Diane Rehm Show. WFAE's next public conversation will explore the outlook for arts and cultural organizations in Charlotte. You can join this community discussion Tuesday evening, November 12th at Spirit Square. Details and RSVP at WFAE.org. We're coming right back.
It was a 1980 Ford Fiesta.
Hey, it's Peter Sagal from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. It used to belong to Bruce Willis's brother. It was a terrible car. The door would fall off and you'd have to pick it up and put it back in the car and latch it. Oil would ooze out of the dashboard. It's amazing to think that even that car could become like a segment in All Things Considered or a Bluff the Listener game. Turn your car into the programs you love.
Donate your car through Car Talk's vehicle donation program.
Go to WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the Affordable Care Act, the problems surrounding it, with Michael Tomczyk, reporter for WFAE News, Dr. Roger Ray, Executive Vice President and Chief Medical Officer of Carolina's Healthcare System. They're both in our studio. Adam Linker joins us by phone. He's the Policy Analyst with Healthcare Access Coalition. And Garrick Brenner, Executive Director of Progress North Carolina, joins us from the studios at WUNC. Talk about this grandfathering in of insurance policy. Michael, you have a pretty cogent explanation.
So Adam had a good point right before the break about how if you had a plan before March 2010, it could be grandfathered in. That was the whole promise. If you like your plan, you can keep it. But insurance companies, they know that those types of plans that they have, they've had for a while, the pool of people they can offer those plans to will never get bigger. If anything, it will only get smaller. They now have to create all these new plans that are different from what their insurance was before. So their whole market, their whole business model is going towards these new plans. A lot of them just decided as a business, this does not make sense for us to continue offering these older plans. And you know, that's a business decision. There's nothing wrong with that. So because of that, that's part of the reason that some of these older plans have disappeared, because why would you keep offering a plan that doesn't fit into your new business model?
One of the other complaints that people have that I've heard when they've gotten the sticker shock of going on the website and looking what it's going to cost them, they're getting plans that have coverage that they don't want and cannot use. For instance, an adult male, unmarried, has to have OBGYN coverage. So there's a 55-year-old woman who is not going to have a child. Why? But it's always been that way.
Yeah,
it's always been that way.
So
why?
That's how insurance works. I mean, think about this. Everyone has, ideally, you have insurance that would cover cancer. We're all hoping we don't get cancer, but the way insurance works, any given year, ideally, you're not going to use all of the benefits that fit into what your coverage are. That's just how insurance in general works. I mean, we all have flood insurance. How often do our houses flood? I mean, that's just how this
Actually,
business model works.
We don't all have flood insurance.
Good point.
and many people don't realize that they don't have it until it's too late, because they
that's
think it's part
with
of
health insurance.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, people realize that when it's too late.
So let me take a couple of calls here and share with you a couple of emails and things like that. We begin with Spencer in Charlotte. Welcome.
Hey, the authors of this ACA think that money is static. Money is not static. Money is a flowing, living thing. To require young people to buy insurance and think they won't use it is kind of like going into Starbucks, paying for a coffee and walking out and pouring on the ground. If I was a young person, 20s, forced to buy insurance, I'd be down at the doctor's office every week for a hangnail.
Well, what about that? Do you anticipate that happening? You're in the hospital system. Now that I have coverage, I've never had coverage, I have a sniffle, I'm going to the doctor.
Well, coverage isn't a single thing. These plans offer a great difference between the amount of cost, the amount of payment that actually falls to the patient. So many of those who get covered through the exchanges or the marketplace will, in fact, have a lot of their own money in the discussion as it relates to the consumption of services.
Because there's a deductible, it's a copay.
Exactly.
Let me also bring up, I'm not sure who to ask this question of. Most people who have had insurance in this country have had it through their employer. And until recently, your cost for that insurance has been either zero or minimal. In recent years, some of that cost has been filtering down to employees who have to pay a part of their health insurance. But for the most part, it's been free. And when you go to the doctor and you say, well, what's this cost? The doctor doesn't know what things cost. No one knows what anything costs. So we have no idea of what prices are or what healthcare costs really are. Is one of the benefits, if there is a benefit to this, the fact that suddenly people will now understand that there is a cost associated with going to the doctor?
Well, if they're covered, if you're covered by your company, that side of it really doesn't change for you. I mean, it's all basically still going to look the exact same. The Affordable Care Act doesn't really affect that much. But if this larger discussion over the cost of care filters in, then that could be one way. But it's not like, you know, everyone now all of a sudden is going to go to the doctor and they're going to, you know, have a better idea just because of this.
Dennis in Mooresville, welcome.
Well, actually, Mike, by the way, I was at your 15th anniversary celebration, and congratulations.
Thank you.
My neighbor had the same thing happen that you just mentioned. Okay, they're past the childbearing years. They're both very healthy. They go to the gym every day. They got over a 300% increase in their premium, and they buy on the individual market. And they were told, well, the reason is we now have to give you maternity and OBGYN and pediatric coverage, and they're old. But their baby's 19 years old. They don't need pediatric coverage. So, you know, that's part of that. You could keep your plan thing. That's not true.
So, did insurance companies make these decisions, or did the people who wrote the legislation, the Affordable Care Act legislation, make these decisions? In other words, insurance companies know how to figure out what their costs are going to be and how to offset those costs. Did they make these decisions?
Well, first of all, let me say that in North Carolina, it's just, when people are getting the letters that say my rates, this is my new rate, basically Blue Cross is trying to match you to a new plan, but that's not the plan you need to buy. What you need to do is just know that you need to buy a new plan and go shopping. And so you might find, in fact, you probably will find a plan that's less expensive than the one that's in the Blue Cross letter. So people should shop around, and talking to people in Kentucky who can actually enroll in a state-based exchange, that the letters aren't as big a deal because people can go on and
buy
a new plan.
Would they have been as big a deal if the website worked? And people
that's what
could,
I mean. If it, because the website doesn't work, that's what's causing all the problems.
Well, but to be clear, and to be clear, I mean, there are some folks, though, who are going to have much more expensive plans. That this does kind of create some winners and losers. You're going to have a lot of folks as well who can get cheaper plans because of the subsidies and who will get plans that are better. Mm-hmm. But you're also going to have folks who had these high deductible plans, and all of a sudden they're going to have to pay more money.
Ed tweets, so much focus on the website, and no one mentions the law alone is helping people. Getting sick and keeping coverage is a big deal.
And again, this is the winners and losers. So for example, one of the people that I've been meeting with has a pre-existing condition. Before this law, when she would try to get health insurance, they would tell her, you have a pre-existing condition. We cannot cover you. Some younger women could see their rates go down because of the way that you know, things you're allowed, the maternity care benefits, as an example, the things you're allowed to charge for and not charge for as an insurance company. Some older folks could actually see their rates go down a little bit because insurance companies are only allowed to basically charge, they're not allowed to charge older folks as much just because of their age as they were before the law. So there are kind of some winners and losers in all this.
Carol on the way. Go ahead. Okay. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that when we talk about losers too, I would be careful about that because someone is paying more, you know, they don't need maternity coverage, but now they get mental health parity and maybe they're going to need that, and maybe I don't need it, but I'm paying for that. That's how insurance works. But also, you're buying into a new system where if that person who's supposedly a loser has a gap in coverage or something like that, a lot of them may not have ever been able to buy a plan again because they had some pre-existing condition or something like that. So I think we have to be careful talking about losers. There are people who might pay more and not like it or something like that, but it's just sort of a different system.
Well, there are those who look at this and say it's socialism because I don't need OBGYN coverage, but I have to buy it because I'm subsidizing those who need it. But that's how insurance has always worked, correct?
Correct.
Okay,
yeah,
so insurance is socialism.
Well, the more you – it is a risk-spreading sort of a thing, and the problem is the more you allow insurers to chop up the risk, to separate out, like Blue Cross for years has separated out maternity coverage as a separate policy, it makes that separate policy more and more expensive.
Carol,
a lot of people couldn't afford maternity coverage.
Carol on the web writes, as a self-insured 55-year-old woman, I've found better, less expensive coverage on the exchange. Sarah emails, maybe one of your guests knows this, but policies are available beyond the healthcare.gov exchange. United, Aetna, and others do offer individual policies in North Carolina. There are other sources of insurance beyond healthcare.gov. Let's talk about that for a second. There are only two insurance companies writing policies in the exchange in North Carolina, Blue Cross Blue Shield and Coventry.
Right.
In many cases, only Blue Cross Blue Shield is writing policies in certain areas of the state. Why? If everybody's writing, if I can call Aetna today or United and get a policy without going through healthcare.gov, why aren't they all on the exchange?
Again, this would come down to business decisions. So you look at, part of it is Blue Cross is the dominant insurer in North Carolina. It covers far more folks than any of the other insurance companies do. So they had the biggest stake in getting on these exchanges as an insurer and you know, making sure that they're trying to be competitive with, well, in some cases, it's just themselves.
But why didn't Aetna want to get on?
I mean, that's a good question.
So just to add to that, and that's absolutely right, and then so I just want to, speaking directly to what she said, you only need to go through the website and the exchange and the marketplace if you need subsidies or if you want to check subsidies. I mean, if you don't get a subsidy, you know you're not going to qualify, then you can buy off the exchange too. So you can, and there are more insurance companies offering off the exchange.
And keep in mind,
just going to say that a lot of the insurance companies, the national insurance companies, think that the people getting subsidies will be less healthy. And so the insurance companies aren't sure about the risk of the people who are going to be enrolling through the marketplace. So Blue Cross took the plunge, but not everybody wanted to do that.
So what does that mean for competition? Because if you are in the exchange because you need the subsidy, and there's only one insurance company, and at maximum only two in North Carolina, what does that mean about competition, about keeping prices low? What does that mean?
If you look at – so Kaiser is an organization that studies these things and has looked at the premium rates in states that have more competition and rates in states that have less competition. By and large, the states that have more competition, say you have five or six different insurance companies in an area offering plans, those premiums are going to be cheaper than they would be in states like North Carolina where there's, you know
– a monopoly.
Yeah.
Well, and I spoke to some of the national insurers, too, like the Aetnas, and, I mean, they prefer to be – they're picking a few states because they don't want to take too much risk. They don't know what it's going to be like, and they prefer state-based marketplaces because if there's something in the market that they need change, the state can be – or the website or something, the state can be very responsive.
Does Carolina's healthcare
go into the federal.
Does Carolina's healthcare system have a relationship with both Coventry and Blue Cross or just one or the other?
Both.
Does Novant? I don't want to, maybe you can't speak for Novant.
They do.
But
they do.
They have relationships. What about doctor networks? What if you like your policy, but you're willing to change because you have to change, but you like your doctor and he's not in the network of the policy that you chose?
Well, I think that's really where information is critical, and the fact that the website has been such a problem early on that's making anxieties around that even increase more. As I said earlier, the basis for any of this going well, at least in my opinion, physician, is that the patient-physician relationship is a trusting one, and it's one that can be maintained. So there are options where a payer has a pretty wide open network by nature, and therefore provider or physician or hospital choice wouldn't necessarily be an issue. There are several examples of those, and we have relationships. We, Carolina's healthcare system, have relationships with Blue Cross for many of those. There are other patients who say, I know my doctor, I know my hospital, I know my network. Now what I'm interested in is affordability, and there's a lot being tried on these exchanges. We have one together with Coventry Health and Carolina's healthcare system that's a limited network in that regard for those who say, look, I've got my relationships. I trust them. I feel good about it. Now I'm looking for affordability, and we believe you can get to affordability that way.
Garrick Brenner's been sitting here quietly and patiently listening to all of this, and he's with Progress North Carolina. They're trying to get the legislature to reverse the decision on Medicaid. Are you making any headway at all? Are you talking to people on a regular basis, and what are they saying back to you?
We've held a few events across the state. Good turnout. There's continued to be media conversation about this. You know, the one important point to make is that the issues of the healthcare.gov website and the issues of the ill-fated promise of if you like your plan, you can keep your plan, those don't have anything to do with the question of Medicaid expansion. Whatever happens with the website, those glitches will get fixed. And whatever filters out with people having to move on from the plan that they had, that should not have any bearing on this question about Medicaid expansion. The reasons for opposing Medicaid expansion don't really wash out when you unravel the details and figure out what's really going on here.
And what are you hearing from politicians, from policymakers in Raleigh?
Well, you know, unfortunately, this has gotten it's ideological. The Republicans are pretty much hell-bent on opposing anything with the Affordable Care Act.
Do you think that will change as this rolls out and people start to be covered under this situation and people look at their next-door neighbor who maybe does have Medicaid, they are insured, but next door you're not insured because you can't afford it, and you're in the Medicaid gap. Do you think pressure will mount from citizens?
Well, so there are some people who are thinking that, you know, this decision to refuse Medicaid expansion just is not going to hold up. Eventually, as the ACA folds out and you see other states getting money from Medicaid expansion, that North Carolina lawmakers will eventually relent.
Garrick Brenner is Executive Director of Progress North Carolina. He gets the last word. Adam Linker, Policy Analyst with Health Access Coalition. Dr. Roger Ray, Executive Vice President and Chief Medical Officer of Carolina's Healthcare System. And Michael Tomczyk with WFAE News. Thank you all.
Thank you.